Family, why always family members? What's the important thing there?
You mean in when you go to the other side, family? Oh, I believe that we are wed together. I think we're an eternal, a universal and eternal family. One of the things that amazes me is I believe truly that we will have an opportunity to interact with each other. In fact, I believe I'll meet all of you on the other side, and you're going to say, do you remember when you met me at that meeting that night? I'll go, yeah. Because we will always be woven together. And I don't think it's just family, because many times, in fact, I'm trying to remember who it was. Was it Thule? Was there a guy named Thule who told his near, and he fell 30 feet and bounced off the cement and broke everything and died?
Oh, it's Thule.
Yeah. Who? That's it. Okay. Marty. And he meets his best friend? Yeah, his best friend is his guide. It's not it wasn't a relative. In fact, he saw relatives, but who he stayed with the whole time was his best friend. Who his best friend, now listen to this story, his best friend had killed himself by hanging himself in his bedroom, but he didn't hang himself. Remember that?
He was stretching himself because he was short.
That's right. This is true. No one but Thule knew that it, because he never told anyone that every single day he used to get on a chair, he had this rope that he hung in his bedroom, and he would stretch, and he would, the chair was under him, and he would just hang like so. And he had done that every single day. One day, guess what happened? The chair slipped out from under him, and he died. All of his family thought he committed suicide. No one could believe it, And so when Thule meets him, his best friend says, please tell him that I'm fine. I just blew it. I kicked the chair. But anyway, he went back. Thule was able to go back and tell his parents, hey, he's there because he just had a flip of an accident. But are there accidents?
Is that where the phrase kick the bucket comes
from? That's it. But this is kick the chair. So I don't think it's always family, but I think the importance of family is very powerful. I think it really is. It connects us eternally. I think that if we are able to be responsible for our family, then there's always that connection. In other words, I can't be responsible for all the world. I couldn't do, say, genealogy for the world. Find all of you and all of your progenitors. But my responsibility would be to be able to find mine, whether it be through the work I do here on Earth to do genealogy, or whether it would be afterwards. And this isn't just LDS. This is just, none of my family is LDS. And I have two cousins who are absolutely crazy in genealogy. And I think it's wonderful because it connects us. It connects us so powerfully. And I think it's great. Any other question? Yes.
If there are no religions on the other side, what do missionaries do?
They teach the word of Christ. They teach of why we're there. They teach. And you see, what you're getting confused with is there doctrine there? I don't believe doctrine as we know it. There is only truth there. So the missionaries are teaching truth and guiding people to the light, the greatest light. And so, no, there's no, quote, religion. I used to say, well, I guess some of us have an M or a C or a, whatever the on our forehead. No. I can tell you another near-death experience that would explain that, but yes.
There's a difference between the church and the gospel.
Right, and the gospel is what would be being taught, yes, which would be the gospel of love and light and eternal goodness. Yeah, and that is so much more than doctrine. And then if we eliminate that awful word doctrine and just go for truth, then, what a beautiful thing. And it's not about doctrine, I don't believe. Yes, sir?
Well, one question I haven't quite got full. I've read a lot of near-death stories, but one thing I haven't quite got clear, maybe you have encountered it, is if some people are separated when they get up there because they haven't learned lessons of love and they're too selfish or too, whatever. And does everybody who's separated in that environment eventually get brought into the light?
I believe, and this is, I would highly recommend you read a book called Descent into Heaven by Howard Storm. That would probably really answer. One of my most favorite is Howard Storm's Descent into Heaven. Howard Storm. Powerful.
descend into hell, isn't it?
No, descend into heaven. Yeah, you're right. It was descend into hell at the beginning. But that's the whole idea, is they're contradictory. And that's what it's called, is descent into heaven. He was an atheist when he has his near-death experience, which makes it, I think, I love to hear from people who have experiences when they have not been indoctrinated into any religious perception, because it makes it so much more powerful to me. Not that others' experiences aren't just as powerful, but for me, it really helps me to go, wow, this person, look where they went from here to here. One of the things he was shown in his near-death experience, Howard went, and by the way, many of these people meet a being that they call Jesus Christ or the Savior. Okay? Many of them do. Not all. Okay? If you're a Buddhist, you might meet a being of light and not recognize anything more than a being of light. But many of them, and in this case, an atheist who is taken into the arms of Christ, is just, oh, when you read the story, it's beautiful. He has three guides that take him all over the place, and he learns a lot. And these three guides are said to him, and now some of us must have, just think about this right now in this room. Each of us at least has one
too much water
guardian angel. And hers is a lively one. But each of us has a guardian angel, at least one. Just think of how many spiritual beings of light and goodness there are surrounding us. That is so incredible when you think about it. When you think about that and then put that into perspective, it makes it so incredible, because you and I encounter some being always being with us and help us. Okay, so another thing. He says that these three guides, they take him all over, and he is learning about himself. He's being shown his life as it was here on earth, as a little boy, and so on. And his life review, as they call it. Then, all of a sudden, his life review ends, and he sees in the far distance the most beautiful city of lights beyond anything. Now, these beings of light are already magnificent, but this city is so glorious, so incredible, that he hides. He says it's like he's on a knoll, and he's hiding behind this grass, and he's like, oh my gosh, and he just looking at it through the, and it's so perfect and good that he knows he just can't bear to look at it. And the beings of light said, do you want to go there? And he said, no. Oh, no. I can't ever go there. I don't deserve it. I'm not good enough to go there. And they said, Howard, you can go there. You've got to go back. You've got to teach what you've learned. You've got to experience and learn, too. You've got to go back. You'll go there. You will. And Howard was like, oh, I could never go. So that, in many ways, answers the idea that somehow we judge ourselves. Has anyone ever known someone who's doing heavy drugs? Oh, don't have to raise your hand. Raise your hand. Okay, you know somebody who's doing really heavy drugs. Okay. Do they like to go with you to your family dinners where everybody, your grandma goes to church, and do they like to be at that atmosphere? Your friends were doing rave parties, you know, and you invite them to a fireside. A what? You know, a live. Or you invite them to a near-death experience meeting. Come, and they go, no, I'd rather do the drugs, they're closer than. Okay? Why? Why don't they want to be with us or with other people? What do you think?
I think they feel uncomfortable.
Who said that?
I did it.
Yes. And is that not. Now, what about you? Let's all go tonight. Let's have a rave party. How are you feeling? Not especially comfortable. That is how we take what we are with us when we're comfortable. It's just a powerful thing. When I learned about the near-death experience, having been a Catholic and knowing that there was, purgatory and heaven, two places. Heaven, you went and you floated on clouds and you had harps. That's what I thought. Anyway, and then there was purgatory, which was the place in between heaven and hell. And that's what I had learned, you know. And then when I was introduced to a new concept of what afterlife would be, I was very touched because here's what made so much sense. The goodness that you reach to in this level of mortality, and you desire, maybe you're not going to be perfect, but you desire to become better and better and to grow and learn, that's the level at which you're going to enter into that other side. That's what I've observed in the near-death experience. Even like Howard, when he was there, he could see he wasn't ready to go to that next place. And then, in Chile, do you remember how we saw the lady in the yard? Okay, the guide is taking Chewie along, and they're going down a street. It's not a street, but it's a street. And there's a house, and the house was darling. And there was a garden outside, and it was adorable. And he said there was a woman. I don't remember him saying he knew her, but he said this woman was in her straw hat tending the garden. You could feel, remember, they don't have to talk, you could feel her happiness. She was in ecstasy. She couldn't ask for anything more. And he asked the guide, well, is that heaven? And the guide said, for her, that is heaven. I don't know. But when I get there, if I can come back and come to a meeting, I'll let you know. But isn't that, I love that. So I have good desires. And those who have gone before you desire good for them. Because I think it makes a difference. People who have died through suicide. George Ritchie talks about that. And so does Brown. Does anybody? Oh, David left. Do you remember Brown? David, you're there. Do you remember Brown? Anyway, she tells about, she tries to commit suicide, goes to the other side, and then she said that. Because she never did try again. She just.
Is she Fenimore? Is she the one that?
Fenimore is one. You're right.
Is she the one that went to hell or felt like she was?
Yeah, she went. But what was amazing is all of them are shown that the thing that is so much like hell is those that are left behind, their parents, their family, who suffers. The longer they suffer, that spirit being suffers with them. Does that make sense? It does. So if you're suffering, just see that you can let them go. So any other questions? Yes?
Do you think there's a time frame? A certain, we don't know exactly when, but there's a time frame. Because I've lost a lot of people. And I had a friend who always said, she was older than I, who always said that she would never live to ever have children, could get married. She was probably 3 or 4 years older than me. And she was killed in a horrible car wreck. And she never lived long enough to have children and to get married.
Let me just tell you what I've learned from near-death experiences. I do think there is a time frame. Interesting enough, many people who are sent back are told it is not your time. Am I right, Dave? Yeah. Have you read that? Anyone else? But I can't specifically say who, but specifically, it's just those words. It's not your time. But the incredible thing is they're not forced to come back, but because they're given knowledge, sometimes, like in Elaine's case, if I'm correct, Elaine was shown that she was going to have 2 more children. She chose them to come back. Same as the missionary. He was shown what his father would go through, and this wasn't the anguish that he wanted to put on them, and this wasn't the time. Obviously, he had already lost his wife, remember, because he saw his mother on the other side. He saw his sisters. So this man, his father, had already been through great pain. So it wasn't his time. So I do believe that, yes, there is a time. I once in a while say, you know, have you ever noticed that challenges keep coming? I'm going to be 65, because you all figured that out, in a couple weeks. And I thought that as I got to this age, that it would be like, whoa, easy. No more painful experiences. Oh, let me tell you. And anyone told, I don't know who told me that, because it's not true. And I said to Heavenly Father, I learned the lesson yet. Aren't you ready to take me? I thought that this boy, Kevin's death was perfect. Boom, he was laughing, and then he was in his father's arms. Oh, gosh, on the other side. I would love that. That would be it. But then I look at my grandchildren. Would I miss this opportunity to love them? Precious pearls, gems. Would I miss the opportunity to look in your eyes and see you? I just wouldn't. And so therefore, I must trust that he will keep me here until my work is through. Have you asked yourself, what is your mission? Your mission. What is your mission? And many of you are saying, yes, I know what mine is. I found it out, and it has kept me on course. My mission. And therefore, I every time I start to, I go, oh, I haven't finished my mission yet, obviously. And so I keep going. If you don't know what your mission is, look into the eyes of those who love you. And recognize the influence you have on them. We don't think we're very powerful, but you have influence. I don't care if it's your neighbor. I mean, neighbors aren't nothing, but in other words, I don't mean it that way, but meaning that it could be someone who moves away next month. It doesn't matter. Because right now, when you are with them, you have influence and power by the way you treat them, the way you behave, the example you are, your prayers. You can influence so many. Howard Stern becomes, after he's an atheist, and then he has his near-death experience, and becomes a minister, and he's in a, right now, still, in Cincinnati, in a, what do you call it, kind of a ghetto area of Cincinnati, in a very poor, and he's been at this same parish ever since he got his, he got his something of divinity, doctorate of divinity, and he is in this little parish, very, very poor. He said, he went to visit this lady, she was quite elderly, very old, she was really ready to die. We were talking about that today, that we don't want to live to be 104. We were talking, the lady was 104. We were saying, oh, that's wonderful. And she's really happy with being 104. And afterwards, we were saying, oh, we're not sure we want to be 104. So Howard Storm is talking to one of his parishioners. She's been in the hospital 3 months. Or they sent her from the hospital to a nursing home. And she is, like, really, really ready to go. And she said to Howard Stern, she said, Reverend, why? Why am I still here? I'm ready to go. I'll never forget what he said to her. He said, what do you do all day? She said, oh, I pray. He said, pray for what? Oh, I pray for all of the members of our church and my neighbors and my family. He looked at her and he grinned and he said, that's why you're here. You still are fulfilling your mission and your purpose. How beautiful. In her case, she had learned. But she was still here to bless the lives of others. Others are still here to learn something that others can teach them. Powerful. Anybody else? Questions?
This kind of being grateful for your imperfections, where can I study more on that? Because I'm a little pissed.
Okay.
I don't want to be.
I know. You know what I call them? I call them my ugliness. Everybody has ugly. We all have ugliness. We all have a part of ourselves that we hope no one else sees. And they do, though, once in a while. Some of us cover them up really good. This is my theory. I believe that he will take everything that's ugly about you and change it to goodness. I used to hate the fact that I talked all the time because people made fun of me. And I remember asking that it be changed to goodness. And when I began to teach as a teacher, I learned that because I was a chatterbox, I never shut up, blah, 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 I found that was a gift. And what was ugly became something I used for good. So don't ever think that your ugliness is so horrible that you need to bury it. You need to embrace it. Oh, I'm such a gossip. Ooh, maybe I could write stories. You can look at what it is you are and face it. Look at it. Don't be afraid of it. You have a bad temper. Ooh, I can teach others. I can practice. And then I can teach others how to take that temper and balance it out for value. So, there's always a way. You're never ugly enough. You're just ugly enough to change to goodness. So, does that help?
It does. Thank
you. Okay. All right. You're great. Thank you so much.
I think you could say yes. I think we could say that God has changed Sandy's talkativeness to make it a good thing.
Thank you. I appreciate that.
Thank you. Please keep Bill in your prayers this week,
yes,
this next month, and hopefully we'll see him back again. Thank you.